stood at the water's edge, halfway among the cottages. Blue wood smoke trailed from great brick chimneys and vanished in fast swirls, almost as though the whole building, like a splendid yellow arc, were under steam, heading into the wind. The colony was known as the South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club. It was a private summer resort located on the western shore of a mountain lake in Cambria County, Pennsylvania, about halfway between the crest of the Allegheny Range and the city of Johnstown. On the afternoon of Thursday, May 30th, Memorial Day, 1889, the club was not quite 10 years old, but with its gaily painted buildings, its neat lawns, and well-tended flowerbeds, it looked spanking new, and in the gray, stormy half-light, slightly out of season. In 3 weeks, when the summer season was to start, something like 200 guests were expected. Now the place looked practically deserted. The only people about were a few employees who lived at the clubhouse and some half-dozen members who had come up from Pittsburgh for the holiday. D.W.C. Bidwell was there, so were the young Clark brothers, J.J. Lawrence, and several of the Shays and Irwins. Every now and then a cottage door slammed, voices called back and forth from the boathouses. Then there would be silence again, except for the sound of the wind. Sometime, not long after dark, it may have been about 8:30, a young man stepped out onto the long front porch at the clubhouse and walked to the railing to take a look at the weather. His name was John G. Park, Jr. He was clean-shaven, slight of build, and rather aristocratic-looking. He was the nephew and namesake of General John G. Park, then superintendent of West Point. But young Park was a rare item in his own right for that part of the country. He was a college man, having finished 3 years of civil engineering at the University of Pennsylvania. For the present, he was employed by the South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club as a so-called resident engineer. He had been on the job just short of 3 months, seeing to general repairs, looking after the dam, and supervising a crew of some 20 Italian laborers who had been hired to install a new indoor plumbing system, and who were now camped out of sight back in the woods. In the pitch dark, he could hardly see a thing, so he stepped down the porch stairs and went a short distance along the boardwalk that led through the trees to the cottages. The walk, he noticed, was slightly damp. Apparently a fine rain had fallen sometime while he was inside having his supper. He also noticed that though the wind was still up, the sky overhead was not so dark as before. Indeed, it seemed to be clearing off some. This was not what he had expected. Windstorms on the mountain nearly always meant a heavy downpour almost immediately after. Thunder gusts, the local men called them. Park had been through several already in the time he had been at the lake and knew what to expect. It would be as though the whole sky were laying siege to the burly landscape. The rain would drum down like an unyielding river. Lightning would flash blue-white again and again across the sky, and thunderclaps would boom back and forth down the valley like a cannonade, rattling every window along the lakeshore. Then, almost as suddenly as it had started, the siege would lift, and silent, milky steam would rise from the surface of the water, and the rank smell of the sodden forest floor would hang on in the air for hours. Tonight, however, it appeared there was to be no storm. Park turned and walked back inside. About 9:30, he went upstairs, climbed into bed, and went to sleep. About an hour and a half later, very near 11, the rain began. It came slamming through the blackness in huge, wind-driven sheets, beating against the clubhouse, the tossing trees, the lake, and the dark, untamed country that stretched off in every direction for miles and miles. The storm had started out of Kansas and Nebraska 2 days before, on May 28th. The following day, there had been hard rains in Kansas, Missouri, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee. Trains had been delayed, roads washed out. In Kansas, along the Cottonwood River, a dozen farms had been flattened by tornado-force winds, and several people had been killed. In northern Michigan and parts of Indiana, there had been sudden snow squalls. Warnings had been telegraphed east. On the night of the 29th, the U.S. Signal Service issued notices that the Middle Atlantic states were in for severe local storms. On the morning of May 30th, all stations in the area reported threatening weather. When the storm struck western Pennsylvania, it was the worst downpour that had ever been recorded for that section of the country. The Signal Service called it the most extensive rainfall of the century for so large an area, and estimated that from 6 to 8 inches of rain fell in